All right, we are back on the record, and we have been joined by Sharon Eubanks from Office of Legislative Legal. The next item on the agenda is Proposed Initiative 2015-2016, number 87. If the representative could come forward and state your name and then introduce your proponents for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Elizabeth Titus with the law firm of Hogan Lovells. On behalf of the proponents for measure 2015-2016, number 87, I'm here with the designated reps, Peter Moore and Robert Golden. They're here in attendance and have completed the required affidavit.
And can you just tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
Yes. The single subject of the measure is a requirement of an analysis of the projected financial impacts that are expected to result from the approval of a initiated ballot measure.
Is there anyone here who wishes to speak on this proposed initiative as it relates to jurisdiction? All right. Are there any questions from the board?
I have a couple of questions. I don't know that it necessarily applies, relates to single subject, and so I don't know whether you want to wait till once we're...
Well, if you're satisfied with single subject, you want to just make a motion?
Sure.
And then we'll go to...
I would move that we find that proposed initiative 2015-16, number 87, constitutes a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. So that takes us to the text. Go ahead.
Okay. Ms. Titus, understanding that this measure is a constitutional amendment and understanding that there's a statutory provision that is currently requires legislative counsel to prepare a fiscal impact statement for measures that are referred or initiated for the voters. I'm trying to get an understanding of sort of how these two provisions work together, because there's a lot of similarities.
Sure.
Between your measure and what's currently required under law statutorily. And so you're not specific as to legislative counsel staff, you just say nonpartisan research staff. So I'm trying to understand if this is imposing a new requirement or whether sort of the process that exists statutorily, whether now it's just sort of being created in the Constitution, because a lot of the things that you require to be included in the fiscal impact statement are identical to what's currently required under statute. And so I'm just trying to get a better understanding of how these things work together.
Sure. It's a little bit of both. The reason for the language stating that it would be prepared by the nonpartisan research staff is that tracks the current statutory requirement, and I assume that that would continue to be legislative counsel, but that would be, you know, an administrative action that would be undertaken by the state and given to the applicable agency. But it tracks the language, so it's intended to be consistent there.
In terms of the language that's currently in Article 5, Section 1?
Right.
Okay.
The requirements of the fiscal impact statement itself are nearly identical with one addition, okay, which is under subsection A1, which includes an analysis on effects on employment within the state. That's not currently within the statute.
Okay.
The remaining subsection 2, 3, and 4 are in the statute, so it tracks that language, but we're adding an additional requirement regarding employment. And then, so I would assume that the process would be very similar, but would be expanded. And this would be in our Constitution, obviously, so it takes it from a statutory requirement to a constitutional requirement. And then taking, so that analysis would have to be prepared, and then a summary of that analysis would appear on the ballot with the measure.
As contrasted to current law, it's prepared for purposes of inclusion in the ballot information booklet.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
I have a question on part B. It says a summary shall appear on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Is the intent that the nonpartisan research staff also prepare that summary, or would that be done in some other way?
Yes.
All right. Do you have any comments on the staff draft?
I do, and if I may approach, I have some text. You'll notice one handwritten change that I made moments ago, sort of following the board's lead on the earlier measures this morning. If the board would entertain that as well, I think this is a measure that does impose an affirmative requirement. So concerning may not be the best word there. My primary purpose in making these changes is I think use of the term fiscal impact statement doesn't really describe for the average voter what is being required. And so I propose that we use something similar, requiring an analysis of the projected financial impacts. I think that just more clearly explains what the measure requires.
Even though your measure uses the term fiscal impact statement.
Well, yeah, I think that's a term of art that is used in the statute. And so we were trying for consistency. We weren't trying to create something entirely new, as I explained.
Do you think we need to specify in the question what fiscal impacts are going to be addressed, or you think it's good enough to just have it generally out there? Because you've limited to employment, government revenues, and then average taxpayer. Basically. I think right now, when legislative legal does a fiscal impact, it's to what, Sharon, is it the tax base, basically? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a little different.
Well, it does track the statutory requirement, except for the addition of subsection A1. The language is the other three requirements are statutory. So we're adding one more thing.
Plus, it's my understanding that the fiscal impact analysis isn't limited to these four items. It has to include these, but it can include other.
Oh, okay.
So it's not exclusive.
Okay.
Correct.
I don't have much of a position on financial impact versus fiscal impact. I don't think it's a word that is so legalistic that people aren't going to understand what it means. But I don't know if anybody else has an opinion on that.
I guess my inclination is, at least in terms of this single subject statement, I'm more inclined to stay with fiscal impact statements. I might be more inclined to include more of an explanation of what that is in perhaps one of the later clauses. But since it's just the statement of single subject, I don't know that we need to get into a lot of detail up front, and then perhaps we could do a little bit more later on. I think my only suggestion on the statement, the single subject statement, was whether we wanted to clarify that these are for statewide initiated measures. Rather, I mean, right now it doesn't specify, and just because that's my understanding, that
right.
You're only dealing with statewide, not local government.
That's correct.
And whether that might be helpful.
Okay. So I guess as a preliminary matter, do we need the concerning and in connection therewith, or could we just say an amendment requiring fiscal impact statements on statewide initiative?
And I'm fine with requiring.
And getting rid of in connection therewith, or do you think we have enough of a trailer to make it worth?
I know you guys had this discussion on some of your earlier.
Well, the floodgates opened, but this one I think that this one I think is actually pretty simplistic. My, hesitation on the other one was that there were a couple things going on in there, and anytime you put an "and" in, it just makes me cringe that we. But this one doesn't have that.
Yeah, but my only concern is because to me there's really two requirements. One is preparing the analysis and then the summary appearing on the ballot, and whether,
okay.
Because you've got those two items, you really need the in connection therewith.
That's fine.
Can I propose something like requiring fiscal impact statements for statewide initiated measures, and then deleting from "and" to, I guess, all the way to almost to "about," and then including the descriptor at that point. So you could say requiring a fiscal impact statement for statewide initiative measures that describe the projected financial impacts that are expected to result from the approval of such measures, and requiring a summary to appear on the ballot.
And at least my feeling is I think we still need the "and" in connection therewith. I think
I'm fine.
Open to including some of the language you just suggested in terms of the description of the analysis, but I just don't see us, at least with the two things.
Okay.
So I would go ahead and move the changes that are shown on lines 1 and 2.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. I like putting ballot between initiated and measures in the start of the second line. Is measures a sufficiently descriptive term to include both constitutional amendments and legislative, statutory amendments?
I would think so. At least I'm comfortable with that. But I'm fine with clarifying that ballot measure. That probably will make more sense to voters.
trying to suit because of the internet.
Did he move that?
Yeah, I'm fine with this.
Okay, so I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So I'm fine changing it down here to prepare a report. If that's, you know.
On the third line you're talking about?
Yeah, where I really don't have much of an opinion either way. If that's what the proponent wants on there, I'm fine with report rather than fiscal impact, but I don't know what the board thinks about that.
Well, we haven't described what the analysis is yet, so maybe it's prepare a report detailing or prepare a report including an analysis of the projected financial impacts that are expected to result from the approval.
Could we use the language from the measure that says describing the projected financial consequences?
We're fine with that as well.
And then I think to still take out. I think you want the about. Or projected of, yeah. And maybe since we've already included the reference to ballot measures, we can drop the as appears on the ballot.
I think that's good.
Sharon, are you comfortable with the nonpartisan legislative staff language?
I'm fine with it. I think Ms. Titus suggested perhaps that could come out, that that's not important. I can understand arguments either way.
I just thought it made it a bit long, but the idea is that it appears on the ballot and then in the measure, I mean, in the text, it says where it's supposed to appear, but.
And I think the idea being it impartial rather than it's the proponents of the measure or the, you know, something along those lines, whether that helps. I mean, I think we could maybe, if we take out the nonpartisan legislative staff reference, maybe we want to include about, you know, sort of a fair and impartial, that concept. But I'm fine with the language either way. I think it's accurate. I think it gives information to the voters as to who's preparing the analysis.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer leaving it in just because I don't think most people would think that legislative staff was necessarily nonpartisan. They would associate that term with the staff of legislators, probably, you know, and that your fiscal analysis might be based upon who has the majority,
right?
So I kind of prefer leaving it in so that people don't think we're adding language that's potentially driven by one agenda or another.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and move the changes that currently appear on lines 4, 3, and 4.
Second.
All right, all those in favor? Aye.
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 Do we have any other?
Well, Ms. Titus had some suggestions on the last phrase. And I'm just curious, so you don't think it's important to indicate that it has to appear immediately following each measure? I mean,
I think it's important. I just don't know that it's necessary for the title, that it would sway a voter one way or the other, if they had that information.
And would you think still that we would need to change the terminology to sort of get away from the physical impact statement to make it consistent with the previous phrase, so that a summary of the projected financial consequences to appear on the ballot?
You might, since we used the word report in the previous line, we could say, and requiring a summary of the report.
The report? Okay. If we strike the language on line 5 about strike under the ballot title,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm wondering whether, because the previous phrase talks about each initiated measure, that no, I want to keep the for the measure, but maybe change it to for each measure, since the previous phrase, to make it clear that we know that there's a report prepared for each measure and that the summary of the report has to appear for each measure. I don't know.
For each measure. We're okay with that. I think part of my inclination also to remove ballot title is I don't know that the average voter associates the term ballot title with what they're actually reading.
You mean this?
Yeah, this, right.
I think I'm going to retract my last suggestion in terms of restoring the measure, I think, because then it's relating back. And so if we're ready, I'd be willing to move the changes on lines 4 and 5.
All right. I'll second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Give me 1 second.
Oh.
To appear on the ballot.
Aye.
I'm going to go ahead and read it. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution requiring fiscal impact statements for statewide initiated ballot measures and in connection therewith requiring nonpartisan legislative staff to prepare a report describing the projected financial consequences of each initiated measure and requiring a summary of the report to appear on the ballot for the measure.
My one thought is that, does this make it sound like if you have multiple measures, that it's a single report?
Well, it says of each initiated measure.
Right, but one report describing the consequences of each measure. Ms. Titus, is the intention that there be a separate report for each ballot measure?
Yeah, so perhaps I see what you're saying. Prepare, could say repair reports.
For each.
Prepare reports for each.
Do you have a suggested change?
it's not our thing, so you want to change it.
Prepare reports for each initiated measure.
Then it sounds like they have to prepare multiple reports for each initiated measure. I mean,
prepare a report for each
initiated measure. Report for each initiated measure describing the financial consequences.
I think that's good. You just need to remove the of on the going to be on line four.
I like that.
All right. Do you want to move it?
Yeah, I'll
the measure.
Yep. Move the amendments to initiative 2015-16, number 87, as shown on the screen.
I'll second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, so now it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution requiring fiscal impact statements for statewide initiated ballot measures and in connection therewith requiring nonpartisan legislative staff to prepare a report for each initiated measure describing the projected financial consequences of the measure and requiring a summary of the report to appear on the ballot for the measure.
I'm good. Are we okay? I would move that we adopt the ballot title for number 87 as it's reflected on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 100. Good morning. If you could just introduce yourselves for the record.
Ladies first. Okay. My name is Lance Wright. I'm the proponent, the chief proponent, I guess, is what I should say.
Co-proponent?
Chief co-proponent, bottle washer, team member.
All right.
You might.
And for the record, the other proponent is present.
Yes.
You want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Mercedes Aponte.
Also can you just tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
First off, let me say that I've got Parkinson's, so if it looks like I'm really, really nervous, don't worry. It's not that. I'm not like Don Knotts where I'm going to go and faint on you. I may stumble, but I'm not going to faint. At least I don't think, anyway.
Okay.
The single subject we drafted. The amendment to reaffirm the right of a mentally competent adult to legally receive help in achieving a peaceful death via the administration of a medical protocol.
Anyone on the board have questions for the proponents on the single subject? No. Is there anybody here who wishes to speak on this? Oh, on jurisdiction? Three. All right, why don't you go ahead and have a seat, or you can just move your stuff, but we're going to have some people come up and talk.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to clarify, are we speaking just to the single subject?
Yes, right now.
All right.
Yeah. John Conklin?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. My name is John Conklin. I'm here on behalf of the Colorado Medical Society as their outside legal counsel. I do have a procedural issue to raise in addition to the single subject issue, and that is that the only filing for this board was the final draft. There was not an original draft or an amended draft filed. And the office did issue a final letter indicating that there had been prior revisions to the proposed initiative, but those were not posted, so I do not know what those were. With respect to the single subject rule, we believe that this initiative actually goes well beyond the subject that Mr. Wright articulated. It actually alters Article 2, Section 3 of the Colorado Constitution dealing with inalienable rights and creates a new definition and adds to that an inalienable right that does not exist already within that section. It also creates a new class of persons under the Constitution called citizen sovereigns, which is defined as, within the proposed initiative, as mentally competent adults who are lawful residents of the United States, which is an alteration to Article 2, Section 1, which is vestment of political power and states that the government is instituted for solely for the good of the whole, and is also, again, a alteration of Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution regarding inalienable rights, which says all persons have certain inalienable rights. So we believe it expands both those sections of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution. It also attempts to define acceptable documentation for a person's willingness to enter into this, what's described as MAID or conditional MAID, in a way that does not indicate any requirement for voluntariness on the part of the healthcare practitioner, but then later in the definition says that the healthcare practitioner can only withdraw from it under certain conditions. And I think those are two different principles under Colorado law. And then finally, it defines medical professional to include a healthcare facility, which is an alteration of Colorado law. We do believe that it violates the single subject rule and that the title board therefore lacks jurisdiction at this time over this measure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Norton.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Michael Norton. I'm president and general counsel of Colorado Freedom Institute, a First Amendment religious liberties sanctity of life organization, and also a member of the Thomas N. Scheffel law firm of Denver. I join in the comments that were just made by the counsel for the Colorado Medical Association. My comments are virtually identical. That is, there is no single subject in the title, the issues. It creates new status of sovereign citizen. It creates a vaguely asserted inalienable right. It creates a new status for Colorado citizens that could impact hundreds of Colorado state laws, having nothing to do with doctor-assisted death or suicide. It creates immunity for citizens who seem to abide by the law but who refuse to follow other laws. It creates a definition of mentally competent adults, a category of mentally competent adults. It impacts medical accreditation, licensing, and malpractice. It creates criminal, as I said, immunity and civil immunity issues as well, and impacts lawful contracts within the state of Colorado. So, you know, there's no way the subject can be clarified to be other than confusing, deceptive, and single subject.
Any questions by the board?
No.
Vicki Aguilar, there was a question mark. You want to testify?
Okay.
I'm Vicki Aguilar. I'm a consultant with the public affairs firm of Aponte Bassam, and I'm here today representing the hospice and palliative care of the Rockies. And I simply agree with the previous testimony, specifically of the Colorado Medical Society and Mr. Norton.
Thank you. Timothy Allen.
Good morning. My name is Timothy Allen. I work with Focus on the Family, and I just wanted to agree with the previous assessments made by the previous three speakers, including Mr. Norton. Thank you.
Thank you. Do the proponents wish to respond to any of the statements made by the people who spoke?
Yes.
If so.
those comments came pretty quickly, almost started to say furiously, but they weren't they weren't furious. But
do you want to take a break? Do you need a minute to?
No, I'm going to, if it's okay, I'm going to start trying to work from the top down.
Sure.
And see which ones I miss. The basic observation seems to be that the opinion is that we have created something new. And what I think the attempt was to follow what is already in the existing law in the Constitution of the United States. The Ninth Amendment says that whatever rights weren't enumerated are still reserved for the people. The Tenth Amendment says for the states of the people. And in the state constitution of Colorado, the 28th Amendment, or the 28th article of the Bill of Rights section refers to rights not enumerated were not disparaged, which seems to indicate that the fact that a right is not called out does not mean it doesn't exist. Our language in the amendment points out that, makes a finding that the basis for the Constitution of the United States and for the Constitution of Colorado is that the citizen is the point from which all other political power and rights emanate. And if the citizen does not call those out and relinquish them, they are retained. So I don't believe the argument of the opponents there would stand at that sort of an evaluation of the Constitution.
Well, in your initiative, you have in Section 4 these rights of sovereign citizens, and in that provision it states that, I mean, beyond health care, it says sovereigns personally responsible for the management of their private affairs, comma, including medical decisions, comma, with no permission required from any person, governmental body, or religious organization. So is there some reason that you didn't limit that to medical decisions and that you broadened it that way to only it includes medical decisions, but not exclusively?
Yes, that was in response to, excuse me, previous drafts, trying to indicate that the concept of a citizen sovereign is that unless those rights are relinquished, they're retained. So it's not something that I was, that we were thinking of as being new. It was just a accurate definition of what existed already in those previous references that I made.
Okay.
And let's see here. Oh, the part about voluntary participation. We basically tried to throw in voluntary wherever we could, because it's the whole intent is that the participation is voluntary on the part of physicians or medical personnel or the citizen sovereign who's requesting the assistance. It was perplexing to us as we looked at this how the law got into this shape anyway, from the standpoint of it's not illegal to kill yourself. But if someone assists you in achieving that totally legal act, then they've committed a crime. And the fact that it's voluntary is was intended throughout the entire drafting of this amendment. What? Yes. The definition of conditional made medical aid in dying refers to the fact that the agreement should cover all the facts, all the points that need to be covered. And since this is a constitutional amendment, I didn't want to nail down a whole list of micromanagement points, but leave it up to the individual involved, since the citizen sovereign is in charge of their own lives, their own life. The medical professional would make an evaluation as to whether or not they agree with the desire of the citizen sovereign and could withdraw. The only requirement is that in their agreement, it's determined that, okay, Mr. Medical or Ms. Medical Professional, you have the right to withdraw at any point. How is my goal of achieving my peaceful death then achieved? And in the drawing up of the drafting of the agreement, you would deal with that. It would be like advanced directives, which allow for everything that you can think of short of actual assisted aid in dying. And the acceptable documentation, again, not wanting to micromanage the possibilities of what the legislature may think is necessary to assure that the person that is receiving the aid volunteered. We simply said that legislation could be drafted on that aspect of this amendment that would spell out what documentation was necessary up to the point of clarification, but not putting undue restrictions on the right to have aid in dying. And did I cover all of them?
Yeah, I don't have any other questions. Anyone on the board have questions? All right. Any comment?
If I could address the first jurisdictional issue that was
sure.
raised regarding the fact that only one version of this measure was filed. It's my understanding that the proponents went through the review and comment process multiple times.
Yes.
I don't know, four, five, six, multiple times.
Four, I believe.
And so in terms of initiative number 100, that measure is separate and distinct from all those previous versions. And so in terms of the requirement of what's filed, in this case, because the proponents had been through multiple times, the legislative staff did not have any additional questions on this version of the measure from the previous version that had gone through review and comment, that the statute provides a process by which the review and comment meeting is waived by the issuance of the letter. And so the letter and the original version of 100 was filed with the title board. That's the only version because there was no amendments and there's no changes between the original and what was filed with title board. Most of the time with initiatives, they'll file something for review and comment. Based on those comments, they'll make changes, and then they file with the title board, and that's why you have the potential for an amended version and the final version. With number 100, because there was not a review and comment meeting held pursuant to the statute and a letter was issued, there's only one version of number 100. And so for that reason, I believe the jurisdictional requirements on that ground have been met.
Thank you. That's exactly what I had been told.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't have an issue with the jurisdiction based on the filing. I understood that the memo was because they had already gone through review and comment. I do have issues with the subject matter stated in the initiative, and I think I highlighted one, which is this citizen sovereign issue, where we're really not just dealing with medical decisions. We're including those in a category of I'm not sure what else. And then there's an immunity provision, and then there's a provision that details essentially how you can enter into this contract. And I don't even know how I would describe the single subject.
Well, I have a suggestion. It's all related to exercising your right as a citizen in Colorado to be in charge of your own life. And the fact that you can't at this point receive help in seeking a peaceful death is what the subject is trying to address.
Right, but that you have this personal responsibility for the management of your private affairs, but that's not limited to just medical decisions. That could be anything. That's a much broader subject than medical decisions. And that's really where I have the primary problem, is that the single subject is, if it's anything, it's that adults in Colorado are citizen sovereigns and are responsible for the management of their private affairs, whatever that means, with no permission required from any person, governmental body, or religious organization. And then there's, you know, all this other stuff in here about the medical aid and you know, I think what you're really trying to accomplish here, but that doesn't change the fact that you have this sentence in here that's just incredibly broad. I mean, that could go to topics like, you know, property. I suppose, you know, we could get into abortion. We could get into all kinds of other things here in this sentence that you have, you know, that are much broader than aid in dying. So that's my primary issue with it. I think that there may also be an issue with the grant of immunity and then the specification of the contract, but I can't get past that sentence. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know where everybody else is.
I share Suzanne's concern about Section 4A and the breadth of the language there, which is not necessarily connected with what I think is the bulk of the remainder. I have a similar issue on, it's in Section 28A, Part 1B, referring to the history records, showing that the founders believed that all rights derived from and abide in the people, and the people are sovereign and the source of all legitimate political power. That also, to me, seems to be, you know, this affirmance by the people of Colorado seems to be a distinct subject from the aid in dying and the bulk of the remainder of the proposed amendment. So those are the two sections that stuck out to me as raising concern about single subject.
And for the record, I believe the measure constitutes a single subject. And I do so because I believe that the provisions dealing with medical aid to the dying has a necessary and proper connection. In terms of some of the concerns raised regarding what I consider legislative declaration language, I don't believe that language creates anything. It's a statement of the proponent's belief of how things may exist, whether they're correct or not. Don't know, but I don't think those have force and effect of law of creating anything new. And so I think that the measure does pertain to a process of that's established dealing with the issues involved with providing medical aid to the dying, whether it's procedural, the documentation, the immunity, all of that is related. And so I'm very comfortable in seeing that it's a single subject. So okay. That's just my position.
You want to make a motion then?
Is it appropriate to have a follow-up comment?
Sure, you can make a comment.
Okay. The point of the findings is to establish that this is the concept of medical aid in dying is a new concept that has developed as a result of the changing environment, the fact that we now have medical procedures that produce a situation that was never envisioned when these documents were drawn up 100 and 200 years ago, that people could be kept what's called alive with machines for days and months and weeks on end. So we, at some point, have to compare that changing world that we live in now to the concepts developed in the original founding documents, establishing documents, that say the citizen is the source of political power and the source of establishing what other layers of government do. So this is an effort to identify that we now have a situation where it fits the general title, the general heading of what am I as a citizen responsible for, but it fits in the new category of this didn't exist two generations ago, three generations ago. And it's only going to become more complicated if we don't deal with it in some way. We'll have more and more conflicts between the idea of personal freedom and liberty to control your own destiny and modern technologies clash, and also the viewpoint of other people objecting to what you do. One of the founding principles of the First Amendment, I believe, was that we have freedom of religion, and the way we get freedom of religion is we don't have state enforce a particular religion, which means that, in my mind, that a person can believe the way they want to believe under the law. They don't have any authority to impose their viewpoint on me, which is what oftentimes gets conflated with the question of what a person has the liberty to do. We're not suggesting that somebody is going to be forced to seek a peaceful death, but we are trying to address the issue of someone prohibiting me from seeking a peaceful death.
And I understand the reasons for your bringing this forward, but you know the merits of a proposal are not really before the board. So we're not making, you know, judgments on whether it's a good thing or a bad thing or a good time or a bad time to bring it. It's simply just, you know, this portion of it at least is really just about whether there is one subject that's in the measure that we can describe appropriately. And if there isn't one subject, then the board doesn't have jurisdiction. And that's really what this discussion is limited to.
So. And at this point, we can go back and forth, as we've been doing all morning, on the title, but we can't touch the proposed amendment.
Right, and we can't get to the title until we get to jurisdiction.
Okay.
So.
And I think I still have the same concerns, and so I would move that initiative 2015-16 number 100 does not satisfy the single subject rule, and that we do not have jurisdiction to set a title.
A second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Right. So that passes 2-1, and the board finds that we do not have jurisdiction to set title at this time.
Well, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And that takes us to proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 98, primary elections. Oh, sure. We need to take a break to do the affidavits.